Gets it off. Here's the three. Oh, it goes in, and he has the 10th assist and a triple-double for Bob Carrington, first since Ricky Greer.
It was a pretty sweet night at the Peterson Event Center last night as Pitt basketball opened up the season against NCANT. Not a flashy opponent or anything of the sorts, but the Panthers got the job done. 50-15 was the score at half, and the Panthers obliterated, dominated NCANT really at every turn. And it was the play of a freshman. In college basketball, it's different than different types of sports. College football is typically dominated by guys that are older, juniors, seniors, older players. D3 football locally in the PAC, when I talk to coaches, they say this conference is won by 22-year-olds. Well, in college basketball, if you have an elite of the elite talent and a freshman that can come in and shine, that 18, 19-year-old, he can steal the show. He can be the one to guide you to places that you want to and need to be in a season. And Bob Carrington showed last night for Pitt that he's the type of player that can do just that. He was ranked 91st overall, the 91st best player coming out of high school in this recruiting class by 24/7. And he just looked flawless. Ran the point for Pitt. Starter from day one. And played incredibly. He's smooth. He just looked so comfortable in a Division I basketball setting. And hey, rookie. Hello there, 18-year-old who was born in 2005. That'll make you feel old, right? Carlton Carrington became the first Division I player to record a triple-double in his debut since Notre Dame's Chris Thomas did so against New Hampshire on November 6th of 2001. For a little bit of perspective, I was 8 months old the last time that had happened. He is just the second ACC freshman ever to have a triple-double in their first college game. The other was Georgia Tech's Dennis Scott, pretty familiar name, in 1987. The 100 points that Pitt scored in their victory over NCANT is the most under Jeff Capel in his six seasons as head coach. It's also the most points since a 112-106 victory over Marshall on December 28th of 2016. The numbers just keep rolling in. It's also the 44th 100-point game in Pitt history. And, of course, the Panthers have won all of those games. It's impressive because I think last year's Pitt basketball team was a better team, a better collective of overall players and where they were in their careers. Nellie Cummings, local kid, Lincoln Park, experience with Colgate in the NCAA tournament. Jamarius Burton had been on various teams, was a contributor for Texas Tech. They had gone far in the tournament. He's been there, done that before. Key leader for Pitt. He was probably their most emotional leader, their most vocal leader, that also you didn't really see as the most vocal. He was the most vocal in terms of communication with the guys and leading by example. You lose Greg Elliott, a lifer at Marquette, who a great three-point shooter for you, and Nike Sabandi, who, underrated player, was awesome before transferring to Pitt. Had an ACL injury in the exhibition game a couple of years ago. Came back strong, was the ACC Sixth Man of the Year last year. Aiden Fish, local kid from the Whippiole, and somebody that was just a spark plug and really a lifelong Pitt fan, walked onto the team, and somebody that just epitomizes Pitt basketball and what it means. But this year's team looks more talented than last season's. The Diaz-Graham twins have added on 20 pounds each. They look tougher. They look stronger. Their ability to drive to the basket and put their back to the basket is starting to be shown and evident. And yes, I know it's NCANT. But Michigan State lost to James Madison last night. Colorado beat LSU women's basketball, the number one team in the country, last night. The struggles continue for Louisville. A one-point win against UMBC. West Virginia did not look good. I saw some people from West Virginia saying this Pitt team might beat them by 20. Now, part of that is West Virginia has four guys that are currently out and not able to suit up for the Mountaineers. Bob Huggins is no longer there. There's a lot of things going on with West Virginia. Pitt will play in Morgantown in a month. Carrington looks solid, and Jalen Lowe was supposed to be the better recruit coming into this season. I thought Jalen Lowe would be playing like this. I can't say that I expected Bob Carrington to have a triple-double in his first game or for Jalen Lowe to have a triple-double in his first game. But Carrington is running the point. He just looks poised. And when you're an 18-year-old playing in major college basketball in your first career game, yeah, even guys at Duke and Carolina don't play that well. It's realistic to ask, is this the best Pitt basketball debut ever in program history? I think so. Now, in terms of being a Pitt historian, I can't call myself one. I'm sure there are others that have lived up to the hype with some of the great Jamie Dixon teams, the teams in the early 2000s, some of the Ben Hallen squads, or when Pitt was doing really well in the 80s, Sean Miller, Jerome Lane. But a triple-double? And if you just overall look at the box score, and again, North Carolina A&T, Carlton Carrington played 29 minutes. He led the team in minutes. He was 7 of 12 from the field. He was 3 of 7 from 3. He had what was so impressive to me, 18 points overall, 12 boards, 10 assists. He had more rebounds than points for a majority of the game. He recorded his 10th rebound before he recorded his 10th point. He had 10 rebounds, 7 points at one point before splashing home another 3. So he came out of the game with about 4.5 minutes left, 5 minutes left in the game, with 1 assist left to get 10 and get the triple-double. He recorded the double-double with about 8 minutes or so left in the second half of play. He recorded it with ease. And I even tweeted out early on, you know, people really wonder, so when did you really think that Bob Carrington or anybody else could get a triple-double? And it took me 5 minutes. It was that evident. He was great at the half. He had 7 points, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists at halftime. And Jorge Diaz-Graham, who was also incredible off the bench in 16 minutes, 5 of 5 from the field, 3 of 3 from 3, 5 rebounds, he had 14 points and a block. Federico had 4 blocks. Another thing I said, Pitt might have 10 blocks tonight. They had 9. Panthers shot 56% from the field. And it was an offensive and defensive clinic. North Carolina A&T shot 14% from the field in the first half. But back to Carrington. He started off by thanking the Oakland Zoo for their energy and just bringing the spark from the crowd. That was cool to see. Only 3 Pitt basketball players have had a double-double in their freshman debut. Duane Blair, Sean Miller, Bob Carrington. That's pretty elite company, right? Duane Blair, NBA, Dallas Mavericks, came back to lead the Zoo Crew alumni squad in the TBT this past summer. Sean Miller, legend, Arizona, Xavier, knocked Pitt out of the tournament this past year. The one that fed Jerome Lane on the Jerome Lane sending it home, breaking the backboard dunk. Bill Raftery on the call. Sean Miller, just a great point guard, great Pitt career, great Pitt man. And Bob Carrington, who Pony and Mueller speculated yesterday We're talking to Cale Berger, could potentially be a one-and-done player. And I was like, I don't know about that. Yeah, he's a freshman who's starting. He's very talented, but a one-and-done? Maybe? Again, North Carolina A&T, but still, this team was clicking. They looked great. A dominant performance in the first half of play, allowing 15 points. And what really got me is that, yes, that is exactly what you're supposed to do. But other teams haven't done that. LSU women's basketball last night, losing to Colorado. Yeah, Colorado's ranked. Michigan State losing a pretty much giveaway game to James Madison. How about James Madison? Football team's really good. Playing up from being in the FCS, now in the FBS. They're good. But yeah, it was a triple-double alert. At halftime, 7 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists for Bub Carrington. He's the type of player that could take this team back to the promised land. Back to the NCAA tournament for the second year in a row. Blake Hinson played 21 minutes. He had 13 points. It was a quiet 13 points. He was making logo threes, and it was still a quiet game for Blake Hinson, which does not typically happen. There is typically not a quiet Blake Hinson game. Ishmael Leggett looks the part, played well in the scrimmage, and overall, heard good things about this team when they played in their scrimmage, closed scrimmage against Georgetown. Will Jeffers played 17 minutes back from injury. Everyone scored that played. KJ Marshall, Michael Hewitt off the bench. Jalen Lowe did play 20 minutes. I like what he brings to the table. I think he needs to be a little bit more aggressive. He did have 3 turnovers, an attack in the basket. This Pitt team has more talent than last year's team. So can a little bit of youth and inexperience in Carrington and Lowe pair with transfers Ish Leggett, Zach Austin, to be able to play well, Hewitt to transfer as well. I think Pitt can make it back to the tourney. I said 21 wins, changed it to 22 before the first game. I think maybe 21, going with my first instinct, is what's correct. 21 and 10? 22 is definitely the better number to get them into the tournament, and I've been bouncing back and forth between those two. I'll stick with 22 just based off of the talent that I think this team has. But we know what Federico can do. He posted a double-double. Blake Hinton's the best player on the team and tied for the second most points in the game. This team is long. They're lengthy. The Diaz Grahams are both 7 foot. Federico's 6'11". And the Diaz Grahams can stretch the floor. They could play on the perimeter. Seeing this team up close last year, you could tell how much they love each other. They care about each other. And they are willing to go out there and fight tooth and nail for each other on the basketball court. And I think that's going to carry over. I think it already has carried over. Where Dior Johnson last year was looked at as somebody who could be a freshman to lead the charge, be a strong offensive player, did not play at all. Why can't Bub Carrington be that offensive powerhouse force alongside Blake Hinson? Ish Leggett's going to score. He's a good defender. And Carrington's defense was also on display. I was surprised by how well he defended. Again, North Carolina A&T. We'll see it later on. Missouri, West Virginia, good teams coming up in the next month. Florida as well around Thanksgiving before the heart of ACC play. But exciting start for Pitt basketball. There's no better way that you could have asked for this season to start at home. Pitt teams have struggled in the non-conference at times under Jeff Capel. Pitt has lost games to Nichols. They've lost gimme games, St. Francis. But they got the job done, and everybody wakes up happy. The wake-up show is presented by 84 Lumber. Put your positive attitude to work at 84 Lumber. Apply at 84lumber.com. Pitt got it done. Can the Pirates get it done in free agency? Also, talk a little Steelers. Austin Bechtel with you. 93.7 The Fan. It's The Fan early morning show. Mike Tomlin will address the media today at noon. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Following is reaction from Cook and Joe to the Mike Tomlin presser, Mike Tomlin presser reaction. There is also supposed to be a special announcement delivered by the Steelers today. It's at 3 p.m. What's it going to be? Really anybody's guess. Could be a decision on uniforms that the Steelers might wear. I don't think it's color rush, but maybe block numbers, throwbacks, playing against the Green Bay Packers. But overall, the AFC is deep. The AFC is pretty talented. If the season ended today, all four teams in the AFC North would make the playoffs. From the top, the Chiefs would receive the lone bye, 7-2 overall, first in the AFC West, number one seed. The Baltimore Ravens are also 7-2, leading the AFC North, would be the two seed. Jacksonville has had its bye, 6-2 on the year. Steeler fans know how good Jacksonville is. Six wins, two losses, first place in the AFC South. The Miami Dolphins lead the AFC East at 6-3. Now, the Dolphins, the realistic question has to be, how good is Miami? How good are the Dolphins? How good is Tua? You could go and slap the Denver Broncos and put up 70 and beat New England and beat the Chargers at the very start of the season. Okay. But when you lose by 28 to the Bills, who right now would miss the playoffs, and you lose by a couple scores to the Eagles, lose to the Chiefs in Germany, did shut out the Chiefs in the second half, but was trailing 21-0 at one point. Tyreek Hill fumbled and led to a touchdown for Kansas City that ended up being what amounted to the dagger as Kansas City's defense held on. Miami's wins are against the Chargers on the road week one. But did the Chargers really have a home field advantage at the Patriots, who might be tanking, two wins on the year? Bill Belichick would probably rather have Drake May or Caleb Williams than Mac Jones or anybody else that New England wants to deploy and claim to have as a good quarterback. 70-20 against the Denver Broncos. Denver is a tire fire. Yes, they beat Kansas City, but the Broncos aren't very good. That was at home in the 80-degree Miami heat, where Tua could sling it around against a Broncos team that, other than Pat Sertan, doesn't have much on defense. Even though Denver prides itself on defense, yes, Justin Simmons is also good, but Denver's got so many different problems. They started out 3-0. Then they lost to the Bills on the road. They beat the Giants. Congratulations, they're terrible. And the Carolina Panthers, who picked first overall in the draft, took Bryce Young. They beat him by 21. Then they beat the Patriots again. Again, congratulations on all your success, Miami. You were 6-2 going into the Chiefs game, now 6-3. Losses to Philadelphia, who many consider to be the best team in the NFC, and at the Chiefs. Also at the Bills. Chiefs game being a neutral site in Germany. How good is Miami? Somebody's got to win the AFC East. Somebody's going to be three or four games over 500 and win that division. Will it be Miami? Will it be Buffalo? Which team does not want to throw up on itself more? But the Steelers, Browns, Bengals are all in wild card position. If I had to buy stock on anybody right now to win the AFC North, it's the Cincinnati Bengals. Joe Burrow is clicking on all cylinders. He's healthy. He looks good. Defensively, Cincinnati also solid. The Bengals had a big win against Buffalo Sunday Night Football, where Cincinnati from the get-go had everything going. Early touchdown, wouldn't let Buffalo get the lead. Cincinnati's fourth in the AFC North right now because they started off not on the right foot, 1-2 overall. And the Browns. You know, we can hate on the Browns as much as we want from Pittsburgh. How great of a football team are they? Their defense is top three in the league. They might be the best defensive team in the NFL right now? Maybe? Top defenses right now. Browns, Steelers, Ravens, no particular order, San Francisco. But in the AFC, you're talking Steelers, you're talking Browns, and you're talking Ravens. Pretty solid defensively, and that's what's guiding the AFC right now. Solid defensive play, and when you look at the bottom of the conference, New England's there in the bottom of the AFC. Pretty unique and interesting to see. Let's go out to the phone lines. What's up? You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Austin. This is Roland from Castle Shannon.
How are you? What's up, Roland? I'm great.
Austin, here's what's going to go down. Steelers are going to score over 30 points against Green Bay. They're going to find something with this offense. Now that they got the running game going, Deontay Johnson's confidence is coming back. Pickens, Calvin's not being utilized properly. There's only two games they're going to lose the rest of the season, including the playoffs. Those two games are at Cincinnati and at Baltimore, the last game. Seattle's not turned out to be a tough team. They're going to find their groove. They went 7-2 after their first eight games last year. They need Minka back. They need Moose back. This team is going to go on a roll, and there's an anger and a frustration that's building. It's going to turn into positive things, and they're going to celebrate, and everybody's going to do it for Matt Canada when they win their seventh Super Bowl.
So you think they're going to win the Super Bowl, Roland?
Do I think?
What gives you confidence in the offense being able to put together sustainable drives to make that happen?
Kenny started stepping up in the pocket. He's watching tape. The guy's indestructible. Did you hear him tell everybody, I'm playing? He didn't defer to Tomlin. He is livid right now. You know what he's livid at? He's livid at himself. You know what Pickens is livid at? He's livid at himself for not toe-tapping. These guys are perfectionists, just like me.
Roland, I appreciate the call. Well, I hope he's watching tape. I'm like the Kyler Murray contract where it was originally and then kind of negated that he needed to watch tape, needed to get out there and do everything he needed to do outside of the practice field. Remember Johnny Manziel did not watch whatsoever any tape? Not comparing those two, but yeah, of course Kenny Pickett's watching tape. Of course he's mad at himself for the way that he's played in the first half of games. He's been solid in the second half of games, and that's what's important. What's most important is that you can ball out in the fourth quarter. And with the Steeler defense the way that it is, see, here's the thing about Baltimore. They've beaten up on teams in the NFC that have not played much against Lamar Jackson. How much of a thing is that? How much should we really talk about and look into that? Think about Baltimore. Blown out Seattle, 37-3. Beat the Cardinals, a little bit of a close call on the road. Crushed the Lions at home. They've beaten a bad Tennessee team. They lost to the Colts. They got the Bengals at the right time early in the season, and they got the Texans at the right time early in the season. Yeah, the Steelers lost to them in week three, but that was a Texans team with C.J. Stroud making his first career start. The Texans played Baltimore right now. That's a much closer game. It is. It's a much closer game. 412-928-9370. Let's take one more call before we get to the Pirates. You're on the Fan. And the call's gone. Let's talk Pirates next because MLB free agency is here. And a couple of names were pointed out by The Athletic and MLB trade rumors as potential options for the Buccos that honestly, if they make these moves, could bring Bucktober back in 2024. Yeah, not being too overly optimistic, I think it's realistic if some of these guys are added on reasonable contracts. It's the Fan Early Morning Show, 937 The Fan. A couple interesting names posed by MLB trade rumors before we go about who the Pittsburgh Pirates could sign in free agency. MLB trade rumors is predicting a 3-year, $40 million deal for former Cardinals and Baltimore Orioles starter Jack Flaherty. One team being included, the Pittsburgh Pirates. A couple others, the Royals and the Tigers, that with potentially opt-outs involved after the first year or the second year as well. That's one. Sean Manaea, two-year, $22 million deal. Pirates also speculated to potentially be in on that one as well. Jason Hayward, a two-year, $16 million deal from MLB Trade Rumors, regarded as the 42nd best free agent. I don't know about that one. That really wouldn't make sense. It would be a defensive move, and the Pirates don't need to spend $8 million on somebody just to play defense. Even though, yeah, it'd be nice if you could just make it like softball, like a designated player, and have Henry Davis hit, and Jason Hayward just play the field for him and also have a designated hitter. Brandon Belt, 1 year, $15 million deal, is what's being speculated by MLB Trade Rumors as the 45th best free agent, being rumored potentially to the Pirates. And the Athletic has listed some of the best fits for Rhys Hoskins, Mike Clevenger, and Tim Anderson. Hoskins of the Phillies, who did not play last season. Clevenger, a starting pitcher, has been solid, played for San Diego. Tim Anderson, whose option was not picked up by the White Sox. Those are all decent names. Solid names that have not been really surrounding the Pirates in years. Solid free agents that could be signed by the team. Now it's time to fork up the money. It's time to pay up for any of those guys. Some of them are buy low guys, but ones with high ceilings. The floor isn't very high, but high ceiling, decently low floor if they get hurt and don't play well. But Tim Anderson is a really good player. Rhys Hoskins is solid when he's on the field. Why not try to give Sean Manaea a contract and play it out? Jack Flaherty, I think, would be a good move to buy low. Talk about much more coming up. Pre-show's next on The Fan.